Poppyhead Productions presents We Are Adult Show, Episode 9. We're climbing up there. I'm your host, Sean, and across the way with me, Danny. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fantastically well, sir. How are you today?
Not too shabby. Got a little nap in. Can't wait
That's
to
always good.
Get back on Destiny, trying to kind of hammer off some of the new stuff and get into the VOG raid, and then hopefully take a sneak peek at Persona 5 some point this over the week and kind of see how that game is.
Definitely, you know, that game is looming over both of our heads, but not necessarily like a black cloud, but more like a bright, sunny rainbow that we just look ahead and just see the future of a better promised land.
Yeah, I feel like between Destiny, Mass Effect, and Persona, like, it's just kind of like three really nice girls looking at you, and you really don't know what to choose because there's really no bad answer at this time.
Right, and the real answer you want to be able to say is, why not all?
But it doesn't work like that.
No, we don't have enough hands and or TVs to play all of the ladies, using your analogy.
No, unfortunately not. We have a pretty jam-packed show, so can't wait to get started. But I wanted to start with an article, Danny, that you saw yesterday about Marvel Studios kind of coming out and claiming that they're not making any money off their comics and kind of blaming diversity.
Right. You know, Marvel kind of, you know, changed some of their characters. You know, Tony Stark right now isn't Iron Man. I'm not sure what he's in a coma. And so the mantle was passed to a student, a black female student. And a lot of people were upset about that, you know, but she's not going under the mantle of Iron Man. And, you know, Ms. Marvel was made a Muslim girl. And, you know, there's been a lot of other changes. Sam Wilson was made Captain America at one point. You know, they're just kind of like moving away from some of their characters from being white males. Thor is a female now, so.
And it's, you know, not him turned into a girl this time?
No, it's not. He's not Loki this time. He's been deemed unworthy to hold the hammer after one of their events. And so somebody else basically, quote unquote, stole the hammer according to Odin and all of the other people of Asgard. But you can't really steal something that has a mind of its own as far as determining if you're worthy or not, because if that was the case, then anybody else at some point could have picked up the hammer and become Thor. You know, you kind of have to have some sort of qualifying skills or personality traits that the hammer decides to latch onto you.
I just assume it's lots of beer drinking for Thor, for the hammer.
Right. Well, or and the beautiful head of hair.
Exactly. Maybe it's Maybelline.
Reading the comments on the articles and stuff, I mean, it's pretty obvious that, you know, people weren't ready for the change, to, you know, put it mildly. There was a lot of, you know, just flat out comments about, you know, being the diversity being forced down our throats. And, you know, like, the diversity itself isn't a problem. I mean, I was interested in reading some of the comics. I'm reading Thor right now, and that's literally the only Marvel comic I'm reading. Because one of the writers that I really enjoy, Jason Aaron, is still writing Thor. He's been writing it, you know, for the last couple of years. And so, you know, when they have way too many crossover events and just major events and, you know, not as the same level of talent that they used to have, it's just kind of hard to really justify supporting a company that, you know, something is happening and then a couple months later it's like, yeah, you know what, that didn't happen, or we're just going to go ahead and erase that or make this happen instead. So, you know, as a comic book reader, you kind of want to at least have some sort of involvement in the characters and in their stories, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, I know I don't read Marvel anymore, and I have actually no idea what the hell's going on in the Marvel universe. But really, when I was working at the comic book store, it was kind of it was tough to really keep up with things, because literally, like, they would do an event and then all this stuff would happen, and, like, it'd be like, do you want to know what happens to this group during this event? Go grab this book. And it was just kind of like, even though, like, your big heroes would be in the main storybook, they would have their own titles going on with other weird side events going on at the same time. So literally, if you were a Captain American fan, you'd be reading the main title because it has Captain America in it. Then you would have to go and read Captain America, and it would have a crossover into that piece. And then maybe they have like another spinoff on Captain America about nothing about the event, and it's just some little mini series. So you're tricked into like reading like three books at the same time.
Or what they'll do is they'll like have like a less popular book, and they'll throw Captain America in that book, or even in two or three books. So, you know, you might even have to buy 5 to 10 books.
Yeah.
If you truly want to know everything that's happening with Captain America during this event, because, mm-hmm. you know, and some of those books might have major events, and some of them might be, Captain America just came by and said hi.
He's on the TV.
it might even be that. Like, it might be like, you know, there might be a press conference that Captain America did in his own book, and then in another book, it might be them watching the press conference, but they'll present it in such a way that you have to buy that book if you want to know what's going on with Captain America. And, you know, once they got your money, you're screwed, because it's not like, you know, comic books are necessarily completely returnable like a lot of other things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're really trying to get you to buy the comic the first week, because that's the only time it's really worth the full price. I mean, it's like you buy a comic for $3 and literally you can't even sell it back to them for 50 cents. Like, that's like how much it's like buying a brand new car and like the value just dropping.
Well, it'd be like buying a brand new car and then you're trying to trade it in and they're only willing to give you, you know, you pay $20,000 for a brand new car and then you go in the next, you know, a little bit later to trade it in and they're like, you know what? We'll give you $20 for it.
I can't do $20. I could give you $10.
Right. You know, like I gotta sell it. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, it's not the brick and mortar stores either. It's, you know, like Marvel, like a few years ago, they redid all their stories with new number ones. And so they basically made all their books to the $3.99 price point too. It's, you know, before they had, you know, the major characters were $3.99 and some of the lesser characters were $2.99, which, you know, kind of encouraged people to buy, you know, the smaller characters because, you know, hey, it's only a couple bucks. You know, it's not that bad. But now everything is, you know, $3.99. And then, you know, the major stories are anywhere from like $4.99 to, you know, $6.99 for like the annuals or just different bigger, thicker books. And so it's, you know, that's probably another thing that's, you know, they're not taking into account that as to what's hurting their sales. And I don't even know if they're able to see if the digital market, you know, because now they have the Marvel online subscription service where you can read pretty much their whole library online if you just pay them. So I don't know if that's another thing that's hurting sales, but
yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to say. I think you still have traditional people out there still reading the comic book. And I mean, at this point, Danny, I think like I'm getting ready to go digital just because of I have no more space for things, you know? Like, I think there's probably a few titles that I probably still want to keep as like hard copies of, just because I want them. But man, like, I think when I think of like when I'm looking at all the manga and I think about some of the other series like Batwoman and stuff, like, I feel like it's at this point, like, I want to go digital so I don't have to carry this stuff. Like, I read it once and then I got to lug it around the rest of my life.
Right. And I, you know, at one point I had like probably 10 or 15, you know, small boxes of the comics, and I just realized, you know, I wasn't ever going to read them again because I'm still buying new books and other things. And so I have a friend that I just kind of basically paid it down to him. I gave him the books, and, you know, for him to read. And then if he decides at that point to read them and keep them, that's fine. If he decides to read them and pass them on, that's fine too. But at least, you know, they're not in my house. They're not in my way. They're his problem now.
Exactly. The article also talks about talent, and I assume they're talking about writing talent. I mean, to be honest, like, I don't know, like, who's even writing over there anymore. I mean, do they still have Bendis on the Marvel side, or did he leave?
They still have Bendis, and they still have Millar, and that was kind of what the article was talking about. It's like, it's, you know, true, like, you know, you know, Miss Marvel is a Muslim woman, but they still have a white man writing for her. And, you know, what can a white man know about being a woman? So whether or not that's an accurate statement or that's just nitpicking in defense of the diversity and kind of like trying to oppose Marvel, I'm not sure. But, you know, they were talented writers at some point, whether they just got lazy or just started living off of what they did in the past and aren't really caring as much anymore about what they're writing now, just phoning it in.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it's just I don't think they're motivated anymore. I mean, I think even Bendis, his stuff was like really good in the beginning, and then it's just kind of like it's just hit or miss. I think sometimes it's like I think like the corporate people write out, here's what's going to happen. Now you make it happen like this, and I think sometimes it gets rid of the creativity on their stuff.
Right, and you know they kind of suffered that a little bit in the movies too. Like why Jon Favreau dropped out of directing Iron Man is because, you know, he wanted to have certain villains, and Marvel was like, "No, we're setting it up for this, so you have to follow this guideline, and you have to hit these points, and you have to make sure that these topics and these characters are brought up in your movies,
yeah,
so that we can continue forwards towards the Avengers movie."
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but man, I think they did okay with the movies, but I think their comics are just at this point, like, just suffering, to be honest.
Right, you know, it seems like they're definitely putting a lot of their focus on the movie side of it, and you know, they're just now kind of realizing that their comics are suffering. You know, and DC, you know, they a few years ago they relaunched and a thing they called the New 52, and a lot of people weren't happy with that. They changed characters and they changed stories, and so they went through and they did a thing called Rebirth, and basically they kind of retconned it so that the New 52 didn't happen. And so, you know, all the DC comics are on a kind of a sales high, and I'm sure Marvel's looking at DC saying, well, they got rid of this thing, well, maybe we can relaunch and get away with the diversity and we'll be back ahead of them.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, even though that may or may not be the problem, it's they look at DC and they're just kind of like they're behind DC for the first time, and even Image is ahead of them in a lot of books too.
Oh, really? It's kind of surprising to see Image kind of coming back a little bit. I mean, I know Image has a lot of good titles, but I think it was just kind of they kind of fell on their face a little bit. Like Top Cow really fell down. I don't really know anybody who reads Witchblade, and hell, even when I was ordering it through our buddy Adam, like I was like one of three people at that whole store that was still reading Witchblade. So I know Walking Dead is still really popular over there on the Image side, but I just don't know any other big Image books outside of The Walking Dead and Witchblade.
Right. Well, I mean, they have a couple books that, you know, one of them that I just finished, I was reading, was called Nailbiter. They have another one that's ongoing called Sex Criminals. They have another one called Paper Girls. There's a lot of good books, and they have, you know, they're kind of poaching some of the Marvel talent too, you know, coming over and giving them free rein and just basically letting them write the stories that they want to write. Yeah. And not necessarily censoring them or telling that they have to, you know, follow a certain guideline or have certain characters in there. So I think it's the writers are definitely probably having more fun writing for Image because more freedom and pressure.
Yeah, they're probably writing the stories that they have kind of had bottled up for the last couple of years and are really working on their own projects versus Image having a kind of an agenda for them to write.
Right, you know, Marvel, yes, Marvel definitely has an agenda for them to write. Image, I think their agenda is just to, at this point right now, it very much seems that Image, their agenda is to just have good characters and good stories and let the readers, just make the readers happy and give them something they want to read.
Yeah, makes sense.
But, since we're on the subject of comics, you know, this weekend I went to WonderCon in Anaheim. And so I hadn't been since like 2013 because they pretty much the last few years have had it on a Easter weekend every year. And my wife, you know, is a big family person. And so she's kind of gave me the no on going on Easter weekend. And so this year it wasn't. So I was like, hey. And so she let me go. So it was kind of cool, you know, getting out there and just getting it to go. And, you know, definitely miss it when we went to San Francisco to go out there. It was definitely a lot of fun out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, this year, like, you know, WonderCon is a pretty decent-sized con. It's put on by the same people that do San Diego. And so, you know, there shouldn't be any issue with the promoters or just running it because, you know, they have a lot of practice, you know, with a lot larger con down in San Diego. But this year, you know, I was kind of disappointed in the – was just the way it was run. You know, we went out there Thursday night to pick up our tickets. You know, we paid for parking an extra day and drove out to Anaheim, which is about, you know, 40 miles or so from me. And so, you know, when I went out there, I was telling my buddy I went with, I was like, you know, kind of like, wow, man, we had to pay for parking just to walk in and walk out. And, you know, but it'll definitely be worth it if it if we don't have to stand in this line tomorrow. Because, you know, we got there and we walked right up and it took way longer to get our badges than it should have because the one lady that helped my friend acted like she had never done it before. Like they hadn't even trained her. She was like, so wait, what do I do now?
Asking, and we're just like, asking him and he's like, I don't know.
No, asking the lady that was helping me.
Oh, gotcha.
But it was like, you should have had this covered beforehand.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if they're having those issues, you know, on Friday, which was the first day of the con, you know, then I'm really glad we didn't, you know, we said we're really glad we wouldn't have to wait in that line. And so, you know, drive out there on Friday morning. We're a little bit late, but not too bad. And so we get off the freeway, and the convention center is probably almost 2 miles away from the freeway, would you say?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And so we're driving down, and we get about 2 blocks away from the convention center, and we see the first electronic sign. Convention center parking, you turn here at this street and go back to the other side of the freeway and park at the arena where the Mighty Ducks play.
Oh, my God.
So now there's traffic on the side of the street we're on, and there's traffic on the side of the street going back. And, you know, it's like, if you knew you were going to have parking issues, because, you know, last year the WonderCon was held in Los Angeles because they're remodeling Anaheim.
Yeah.
And so this year they brought it back to Anaheim, and I was like, oh, well, they remodeled it. It must be nice. And so they still were building the parking garage. So there was no parking at the convention center itself this year.
Nice.
Well, they had like one little parking garage structure in the back, but that filled up pretty much quickly. So,
you know, I feel like that's part of the city of Anaheim's dumbass fault too. Like, why wouldn't you have a sign off the freeways that says WonderCon parking at whatever they call the pond now,
right
over there? So that way you go to the hockey stadium to go park in that big old parking lot. It just doesn't make any sense.
It should be, you know, right at the freeways. Like, make a left for WonderCon parking, you know, or something, just so that people, you know, when we were down there, you know, the last time we went, we kind of saw the same thing where there was, you know, accidents, multiple accidents on the road, you know, on the street getting to the convention center. So this time we passed, you know, like a couple accidents. One of them was pretty bad. The car was dented up pretty bad. And, you know, I'm not blaming the convention center for that. I'm just saying that, you know, between Disneyland being right across the street from the convention center traffic and just normal, you know, Friday morning, early afternoon traffic, you know, they could have definitely made it a lot easier for people getting in.
Yeah.
You know, and as it was, you know, we had been in the con for a little while, and there was artists just showing up on Friday, setting their tables up, like, after, you know, 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon, because they couldn't get in.
Jeez.
And so, right, it sucked for them, definitely.
Yeah, that's pretty
And so
rough.
My friend and I, we decided to park. We did, not necessarily, illegal parking, but we definitely did some shady parking. And we there's a neighborhood not too far from the convention center, and you know, they had no parking on certain days for street sweeps, and some of the streets had residents only parking. Violators will be towed. So we found one of the streets that didn't have the residents only sign on it and parked there and walked to the convention center. Nice. And you know, we got there, and our badge, they told us when we got our badge that we had to scan in and scan out, like we did at New York, so they can kind of keep track of who's inside and who all showed up and who used their badges and whatnot. And so we get there, and the area where we scan in is right there, and there's a lady working there, and we're like, oh, we got our badge. Is this where we go in? And she's like, no, you have to go get in line. And so we're walking, and we see the line that she's talking about, that she pointed at, and it's the line of people going to get their badges. And we're like, thinking in our head, talking to ourselves, like, wait, we already have a badge. We don't have to get back in that line, right? And so as we were walking, somebody came out of the convention center door, and we just walked in behind them.
Nice.
Or else, you know, I mean, it's like, it's just bullshit, because like, if you had Friday only ticket and you showed up there and got stuck in that traffic and then you got stuck in that line, you might not have gotten into the convention for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, I mean,
after the con started.
That's just so ridiculous. That's so bad. Like, it seems so unorganized. I mean, hell, at least New York Comic Con was pretty fucking organized. I mean, there was a lot of people, and it was just sheer waiting to get through the gate. But at least it was like, hey, if you have your 4-week badge, you could just walk in through the appropriate entrance. Like, you don't have to go over to this side of the street to get your badge. But man, that's pretty bad.
Right, and you know, like, you would think they wouldn't have these kind of issues because, you know, like I said, it's run by the same group that runs San Diego, but yeah. I don't know. So, but once we got inside, it was a really nice con. Like, we kind of got inside and kind of got in the groove of things and just kind of forgot about the shithole that was getting inside the convention, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and the one thing that I will say about this convention that I did respect was for the people that picked up their badge. When they walked into the convention, the first thing they had to walk through was Artist Alley. So they didn't funnel them through. They didn't bury Artist Alley. They didn't hide them in the back corner. They had them front and center.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking to one of the artists, and he was kind of when he said when he got there, he was kind of pissed at where his table was because he was like basically just looking at a wall.
Yeah.
And you know, you would think at normally when you're like facing the wall, you're at the back end of the convention.
Yeah.
And so when he sat down and got set up and stuff, and then he people started coming in. He realized that he was literally the first row of the convention. So people coming in, a good chunk of them would walk past his table. Like it would be one of the, you know, first 10 or 15 things they would see. So
yep.
he said he changed his tune pretty quickly where he saw that he actually had a pretty decent spot.
Yeah, that's good, man. It's good to see that at least Artist Alley got taken care of this time around.
And so, yeah, so, you know, like we were walking, me and my friend, we walked to Artist Alley and like, you know, within the first couple tables, you know, there was a couple there doing a watercolor commissions. And so I got one from them. His name is Vincent Ramos, and she goes under Janet Chan Illustrations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, both of us at this point now, you know, everybody has been doing Copic for so long. And so we see a watercolor commissions available. We kind of pretty much jump on that immediately.
Yeah.
Especially if, you know, it's quality work, you know, and theirs was definitely quality work.
That's always, yeah, I do love watercolor. I think it's definitely tough to do. And when it's done right, it's really well done.
Right. And I just remember, you know, years ago when we'd go to conventions and there was like, you know, Sarah Richard was like pretty much like the sole watercolor artist. And then eventually there was one more here, maybe two more there. And so now, you know, you go to conventions and you probably find, you know, 20 to 30 artists doing watercolor. It's kind of becoming a definitely hot item. And my buddy was joking with me. He's like, yeah, you know, at some point you're going to have so much watercolor that people are going to come in. And it's like, oh my God, you use Copic? I got to get a commission from you right away.
I disagree. I don't think it'll get that bad.
Yeah, but you know, we're you know, being a little facetious, funny, but definitely with the rise of watercolor artists, you know, it's not a bad thing because, you know, you don't have to be like, oh, well, I already have something from them. I guess I'm not getting a watercolor commission this convention.
Yeah. Yeah, I just really hope that the Anime Expo this year that we're going to out in L.A. is at least it's at the L.A. Convention Center, and we already booked our place, and we're literally walking distance. So it's gonna be it'll be nice. We just have to park the car once. We got a nice. We're not even in a hotel. We were able to get a place, rent out a loft, and it's gonna be pretty sweet. I mean, I'm really looking forward to getting back out that way and kind of spending some time at a con. I think I got a little anxious hearing that you went because it's been a while since I've been to anything. And I don't know if I'm going to make it up to Motor City this year, but I'm just really looking forward to jumping on and heading out there and hitting up Anime Expo.
Right. And that's definitely one of the huge advantages of living where I live because I went to a convention in January. There was a convention I couldn't go in February. I went to WonderCon this last week, and then there's one coming up in May. So, and I'm sure there's something coming in April. I just haven't seen it, or it's, you know, not something that, you know, I'm wanting to spend money on at this point. Because, like I said, you know, I'm going to, like, at this point, a convention every other month.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it'd get costly if you're not careful.
And even if you are careful, it could get pretty costly.
That is true.
but yeah, me and my buddy, you know, we walked through Artist Alley, and by the time we finished walking through Artist Alley, talking to different people, you know, I got a couple more, you know, picked up some prints and some another commission that I'm waiting, hopefully will be shipped soon by an artist named Kristen Lau. By the time we got through Artist Alley, you know, it was already like 4:30, you know, in the convention. You know, we wanted to go see a panel at 6. So we kind of walked through a couple rows of the exhibitioners, and I, you know, it was getting closer to 5, and I wanted to go say hi to some people that we know, Don and Clint from the
Zombie Ranch.
Zombie Ranch, yes, thank you. Name escaped me. Zombie Ranch were there, so I'm going to go say hi to them. And then another friend of mine is working with a group that's making a movie called Nobility. And so I hadn't actually seen him at a convention, so I just wanted to go harass him for a little bit. And our good friend Dan Stong over at Skybound, hawking the their card games that they have. And so
yeah, Super Fight.
Super Fight and Red Card, right? That's the other one?
Red Flag. It's the Red Flag, dating version of Super Fight.
And so, and then I wanted to go stop by. There was a Kickstarter that I had been recommended that morning called Z for Zombie. And the guy was from, they were from Norway, and I saw that they were going to be at WonderCon. So I wanted to go by and check them out and see if they were on the up and up, and if they had any samples or anything to look at, so I could see what I was getting before if I decided to back them on their endeavors.
Yeah, no, totally makes sense on that piece.
And so, you know, at that point we had to go make sure we got seats for the panel and saw the panel, and the con was over. So, you know, pretty much we just hit up Artist Alley, said hi to some friends, and saw one panel.
Yeah, no, overall sounds like a pretty good time as soon as you got away from the parking and trying to get in.
Right, and you know, like in years past, you know, we've gone to WonderCon for one day and we've been able to hit up everything, and you know, even do repeat laps of going back to Artist Alley just to see how some of our artist friends that we've made, if they're making any money or if they're having a good time or if they need us to go grab anything for them to eat or drink.
Yeah, exactly.
But this year is the first WonderCon that I've been to since San Francisco, where having a multi-day pass was definitely advisable.
Yeah, no, I agree. It sounds like it's starting to get into a bigger workload, and I know New York Comic Con was pretty, that one was pretty extensive too, and I could only imagine what Emerald City Con looks like and C2E2 look like now that it's kind of been years later and with everything still constantly growing.
Right, you know, because in the past, you know, the first couple times it was in Anaheim for WonderCon, they only had you know, one or two of the rooms. Like one year they had a high school girls volleyball tournament, and they had another one that had a cheerleading thing. This year they pretty much had the whole convention center to themselves. They had halls A through C were convention center floor, and then they had downstairs. They had the arena, and all that was where like the bigger panels were. But you know, and then hall D was where they had the check-in for everybody. So they pretty much had every single exhibit hall booked between the floor itself and checking people in.
Well, that's awesome. It sounds like at least there was some good stuff going.
Definitely. You know, I wish, like I said, I just, you know, wish I would have known it was going to be that big and had planned a little bit further ahead, because by the time we decided to go, they had Saturday was sold out, and so was the weekend pass. But definitely recommend, if you're, you know, around, WonderCon is definitely one of the cons to check out. It's not a small fly-by-night operation anymore.
Exactly. And I think you got a little spoiled with WonderCon, because you drove home and decided to go do some brewery hopping as well.
Oh yeah, yes, we did on a Thursday night, you know, because we didn't want to get stuck in traffic on the 91, you know, where, you know, a 30-minute drive can become an hour and a half to 2-hour drive.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, right there in Anaheim, we hit up a couple of breweries, Bottle Logic, you know, which I, you know, spent that whole week at. They had a couple of beers from there. And then we went over to the brewery. And my buddy had never been to any of these, so it was kind of cool taking him on a beer tour. The brewery, you know, they have a lot of – like their specialty is kind of like sours, and they have kind of wine-ish based beers. But they also have some porters and stouts, but they're the ABV on their beer is pretty high, and they're it's very tasty. Like some of the beers, I had a horchata one that they added coffee to, and so it just tasted like it's a really drinkable beer, and it had way too much of a ABV for being that drinkable.
It was dangerous, huh?
Yes, and then from there, you know, we went over to Phantom Ales, and you know, they have some pretty good beers, but the thing that we can get in trouble with them is they also do their own meads and ciders.
Okay.
And nice. We got a flight to kind of share, but there was a cherry cider mixed with their ginger beer that they make there, and then they had a apple cider and a pear cider, and those three, the alcohol in those were like 13% to 16%.
Jeez, dude. Man, yes, you were not joking around on Thursday night.
And, you know, it just tastes like you're drinking, like, you know, a regular, like a hard apple cider, you know, like you're drinking like a Angry Orchard. And, but it's, you know, 16% alcohol as opposed to like 3.5% or 4.5% or whatever. So, you can definitely, forget things like how to walk after if you have too many there.
Nice.
But, and it looked like while we were there, it looked like they had a bottle share kind of going on where people were bringing in, different bottles from different breweries and stuff. And so, you know, it'd be kind of nice to, you know, at some point get in on something like that, you know, just to, so you don't have to, you know, drink a whole 22 ounce bottle by yourself, or you don't have to, hunt down rare beers and spend $100 for a beer when, you know, you just kind of really want to taste it.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. There's some of the bigger bottles that are hard to come by get pretty expensive.
And so, and then on Friday night on the way home, we wanted to stop and get food. So we stopped at the brewery by us called Wick's. We went to the Brew Crew and had a couple beers there. And then we walked over to Wick's to try to eat, but their kitchen was closed. Apparently they closed their kitchen like 2.5 hours before they closed the restaurant, which kind of doesn't make sense, but I guess that's why I'm not the boss of the place.
Fair enough.
But at the Brew Crew though, I actually tried a beer that, you know, reading the description, I kind of pretty much thought I wouldn't like, but I tasted it and ended up getting a full pour. And it was a Raisin Hell is what they called it. And it was an ale with raisins and star anise, which is like this spice that kind of tastes like licorice.
Yeah.
It's what they put in licorice-y taste in root beer, it's from the star anise. It's a key ingredient in making root beer.
Ah, gotcha.
But then it was.
That's not bad. That doesn't sound too bad.
No, they kind of balance each other out, the raisins and the licorice. And it was, I don't know if I could have drank a bunch of it, but a pint was definitely an easy drink. And then went over to Wick's and they did another one of their Firkin Fridays, and they did their Bard Song, their brown ale. And they aged it with espresso beans and orange peel. And we both have similar opinions on browns.
Yeah, not very good. Not fans of brown ales.
No, we're not on speaking terms with browns normally, but the coffee in this one. Yes, well, barely. We tolerate him
barely.
But the espresso hid that like baby vomit taste that browns usually have, that is a driving force to get us away from them. So it was cool. Like, you drink the beer, and it tastes like you're drinking a coffee, and then you burp up the orange peel flavor. It was kind of a fun beer.
I think it's just kind of weird, though. I feel like orange and coffee just really don't go together, though.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of doubtful, too, but, you know, they made it. Somebody had to drink it. I was there. I'll take one for the team.
I'm proud of you.
But, you know, they're definitely, so far, you know, I've had two of their Firkin Friday beers, and they both have been espresso themed, but not that I'm complaining. I just, they've been very, very tasty. So hopefully they kind of branch out a little bit and but still keep the theme of it being delicious and drinkable.
Yeah, and I went to Ernest freaking last Thursday, and they had a mango habanero IPA, and that one was I thought it was really good. I mean, I know we talked about it last show, but now thinking about beer is starting to make me thirsty, and I'm now having flashbacks of reliving that beer.
Right. You know, we just brought up that you were going last week. You hadn't gotten the final verdict on the taste.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, I never think pepper in a beer that is going to be an IPA or a lager is going to be good, because I just feel like the pepper is going to overpower it. But I mean, they did a really good job on that one, and I really enjoyed it. It's almost to the point where I wish I got a growler of it, but I think it was much more like a relaxed beer to drink versus like, hey, let's have a few pints. It was much of more of just like a nice sip cruise beer, maybe have some food with it or something like that.
Right, usually spicy beers are that. You don't necessarily want to drink too much of it because you'll pay the price later, but
give yourself heartburn or other worse things.
Yes. So, you know, usually like the spice in the beer, like you know, you drink the beer and you get that the beer flavor, the mango flavor, and then as you're finishing the drink, that spice just kind of coats your mouth and tongue, and yeah, which makes you want to take another drink to maybe relinquish some of the heat from that coating.
Exactly. It was kind of a big Saturday last week as well. If you look at it, we had two major releases on some series. So I guess we'll kind of go in order. So literally Saturday morning, Gecko messages me, and of course it's April Fool. So I don't want to believe anybody on anything on Saturday. And Gecko says that Attack on Titan Season 2, Episode 1 is going on, and I think I typed him literally, bullshit, go fuck off. Like I just didn't flat out believe him at all. And he's like, it's true, and he showed the link, and I went to the link, and man, it was. And so I got to watch Attack on Titan first thing in the morning, and man, it was so enjoyable to watch. It literally picks up right where the season one ends up, leaves off. Just no care for humanity at this point. Like the story writer is just like giving the big finger to humanity, and just shit just continues to happen. Obviously, not going to spoil it, but obviously
too late.
Well, no, I'm not gonna.
Nah.
Not too late. Just things happen, and there's new things going on, and now it literally on the end of season one, you have the female Titan that kind of you figure out is betrays you, and she goes into this hard cast, and just more shit happens. Now there's more questions. No answers were really made. It's just like, no, I need answers. I need this solved. But I was just kind of thinking about the show over the weekend and today and this morning driving into work, and man, I just really think that I think we're going to learn where the Titans come from, and I think it's already out there. I haven't read the manga and the manga, and if you read the manga, I'm sure it's like well ahead of where we are in the anime. So I'm going to probably just speculate things, and I'll probably be totally wrong. But I really think what we're going to find out is the humans made the Titans, and the Titans are basically people that got betrayed by the rest of the people, and they built the walls, and really they're just trying to go after like that 1% that messed around with them. I think there's a very hated passion between the outside civilization and the people that are in the rings. So I'm really excited to see where that continues. I don't think it's going to be a story with mindless monsters just kind of running around the place.
Right. And usually, you know, with any good anime or manga, you know, even if they're mad at the 1%, the way they usually get revenge at the 1% is to wipe out the 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why. Thanks. We didn't do nothing to you, man. Just trying to drink beer and record a podcast, and you're sending a giant monsters to come kill me.
Right, but I think it just makes it easier, just so it's like, you know, if there's going to be collateral damage, or they, you know, it's like, yeah, go kill that guy, and you're pointing to a crowd of people, and they kill the wrong guy, and you're like, no, not that guy, that guy. And they're like, you know what? Let's just make it easy. Just kill them all. And then, because they probably knew or something, you know, just in their sense of anger and vengeance. It's like, well, they knew what was going on, and they did nothing about it.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, it's like the grandkids of people from, like, 300 years ago. You know, like, they're blaming, like, the modern people for stuff that happened all the way back then, and nobody knows about it. Like, nobody remembers. Like, the story wasn't passed on.
Right. You know, revenge is a dish best served, you know, many, many generations later.
Yeah, exactly. And then Saturday night, out of the blue, they aired Rick and Morty Season 3, Episode 1. And, like, literally nobody believed them. I mean, a few weeks ago, there was a quote-unquote announcement on Rick and Morty Season 3, and they basically, like, Rickrolled us. And it was just kind of like, oh, man, like, terrible. So nobody believed, like, that this was airing. And I don't think it actually had that many – I don't think it had as many views as we thought. I'm pretty sure, like after an hour or two, like, it would – I think people finally got into it. I mean, I literally watched the last episode before they shut it down for the night. But it was pretty good, though. I mean, I think my idea of how what season three was going to be a lot more. I think it was a lot more expanded upon on trying to get Rick out of prison. And I don't know if I necessarily liked how the story went in this episode based off what happened. But, I mean, the jokes were definitely there. Like, it was still a funny show, but I think what happened in the show as far as storyline, I don't think I was as satisfied with how it happened. I just imagined multiple episodes that it would take a long time to get Rick out of prison.
Right, but, you know, in my mind, though, like, there's that theory that, you know, it could take a long time to come out of prison, or maybe he wasn't in prison for the reason you thought he was, and so that they could wrap it up in one episode, and that's kind of the route they went. And so a lot of the complaints I was reading about online is a lot of people kind of felt it was a giant infomercial for McDonald's, and they felt that, again, it was another, like, either April Fool's joke or, you know, of them being Rickrolled, of this not necessarily being, like, the official show. Just, yeah. You know, an April Fool's joke infomercial for McDonald's?
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't think McDonald's, I think, necessarily thought they were going to get the publicity for this, as maybe they kind of knew, like, hey, we're going to be mentioned, but, like, I don't think they saw the reaction. I mean, hell, there's a YouTuber that makes random food based off shows, and he actually tried to go through and make that sauce. I mean,
right, and the show's only been out for, like, what, less than a week, and YouTube famous?
Yeah, I mean, this was literally, like, I think he put it on, he did his show or recorded the episode either on Sunday or Monday, so, I mean, I literally watched it within 24, 48 hours of when Rick and Morty came out.
Right, and so, you know, I guess that's definitely, you know, him getting on the right idea of jumping on the iron while it's hot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, congratulations to him for being smart enough to keep track of major events going on in different series. But he's made some pretty cool stuff, though. I'll put his YouTube videos on the Facebook. But one of them was he made the Bob's Burger car, and then he made the perfect sandwich from Adventure Time. So he does, like, a lot of interesting things, and I'll say, the perfect sandwich from Adventure Time is pretty ridiculously big. So that one was actually a pretty funny episode to watch.
Well, I mean, it's not pretty ridiculously big. It's the perfect size.
Yeah, it is the perfect sandwich.
I was going to say another show that debuted a second season was Voltron.
Yeah, I haven't watched that one. It's on Netflix, right?
It's a Netflix exclusive done by DreamWorks Animation. And so you know, I grew up watching Voltron. The original show aired in 1984. So it was like, you know, I was 8 years old. It was like right in my my wheelhouse of being, you know, an eight-year-old animation, you know, I remember coming home from school and, you know, the four shows I would watch was G.I. Joe, Transformers, Robotech, and Voltron. You know, just coming home from school every day trying to catch those four shows. And so, you know, when I heard that they were making a relaunching it, and I was kind of like, yeah, whatever, you know, like, it's just another thing that, you know, ruined my childhood, because apparently my childhood was so shitty that, you know, a remake of it is going to ruin my childhood even more than it already was. Like, the only hope that I had in my childhood was hung on, you know, a cartoon that I watched when I was 8 years old. And now that you've ruined it, my childhood has been ruined.
I mean, is the show just not that good? I mean, I don't know much about Voltron. I just imagine, like, I think that Power Rangers and a bunch of other stuff was, like, basically a copycat of Voltron.
Right, and, you know, I mean, I wasn't necessarily saying about Voltron. I was just talking about, like, those four shows in general. You know, G.I. Joe getting the movies, and Transformers getting the Michael Bay treatment, and everyone, you know, whenever the G.I. Joe movies came out, and, you know, any Transformer movie came out, talking about how, you know, Michael Bay ruined their childhood by making a shitty Transformers movie.
And guess what? You know, you get another one, too.
Oh. No, it gets worse. Oh. Real quick, sidetrack. Michael Bay announced at a press conference promoting the new movie in London that in total, counting the ones that have been made, in total there are going to be 14 Transformer movies. No, I'm sorry, there's 14 more Transformer movies coming, which brings the total with the five that have been made to 19 Transformer movies that are in the works or planned.
Like, where are they getting stories for 14 fucking more Transformers?
No, 14 more Transformer movies. And I guess the one that's being made right now is in production is a Bumblebee solo movie.
Okay.
But, you know, depending on how you feel about the movies that have been made so far, Michael Bay has confirmed that number five is his last one directing. He'll be, like, I guess, behind the scenes, world building, like, kind of, you know.
They're going to bring him in for the fights and the explosions and then kick his ass out when it comes to the rest of the story and hiring of people.
I'd be super okay with that. But yeah, so he's going to step away as a director, and he said he set up in the fifth movie plot points and character development things that are going to, like, basically spring
the next 14 movies. Did Michael Bay say character movies. Development?
He did use those words, and he said it with a straight face, too.
Is he developing more explosions or something?
Right. No. You also forgot about the awesome show of military force. I think the character development he means is, like, the bombers and different fighter planes that the military is letting him use, because he always shows them in such a good light.
Exactly. Fair enough.
but yeah, so if you're excited about Transformers being made 14 more times, then hooray for somebody.
There's somebody that loves it. I just wish, like, I wish somebody would just go through and just make a cartoon version of, like, the Transformers, like, in between the Michael Bay, like, explosion stuff, and, like, fix the storyline, and then when it comes to the fighting, just go back to the Michael Bay fights, and then, like, you know what I mean? Just, like, we know it's gonna not make sense that there's half of it's cartoon and half of it's live action, but you know what? If it has a good enough story, nobody minds rewatching the Michael Bay Transformer fights, because that's really what everybody goes to see when they go see Transformers at this point.
Or any Michael Bay movie in general. I mean, you get, you know, if Michael Bay had his way, his cuts would just be action scenes, explosions, Megan Fox bending over, Megan Fox, you know, having her cleavage out, more fights, more explosions, and then the sequel would have, you know, the other model that they used. And so that would pretty much be the ideal Michael Bay movie. It's just some girl that, you know, half naked girl bending over in different angles and shit blowing up.
Exactly. It makes sense. Perfect.
And I could respect that that's a man's dream. You know, you can't, you can't look down on a man for having a dream.
And you know what? I haven't even watched the second. I watched the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I feel like I feel like I really wasted my life watching that one. Like, I couldn't even, like, try to watch the second one. Like, it makes me so mad, because, like, they brought, like, the two the two characters that worked with Shredder, the two other mutants,
and Bebop and Rocksteady.
Yeah, I want to watch it, Danny. Like, I want to watch it, but I know, like, I won't let my heart get broken again by watching after watching that first one. With the,
right, and
I think it's like Rapey Turtles. I think that's what they need to call it. Rapey Turtles, not Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Rapey, because like Jesus, like, I mean, have you seen the first one?
I saw it like not that long ago, and yeah. Michael, I mean, outside of Michelangelo was the only one, but yeah, he definitely, you know, in the cartoon he had a crush on April. In this one, she probably might want to think about getting a restraining order.
Exactly. I just don't get it. It's just ridiculous.
But outside of that, I mean, like, if they could, you know, get somebody to edit the movies the way they edited Jar Jar Binks out of the Star Wars movies, yeah. Just edit the weird, creepy, rapey scenes out of the movie, it's not really that bad of a movie. Like, Michael Bay movies, I mean, honestly, like, if you look back at the source material for, like, Transformers and G.I. Joe, and it's not really that good. Like, the animation was shit. The character, like, design was kind of bad. I mean, it was all made – those were honestly just literally made to be infomercials to sell 8-year-old me toys, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I know people that were upset that they didn't like the second G.I. Joe because they basically killed off, like, the whole cast of the first G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
And, you know, I asked them, like, did you watch the cartoon? And they were like, no. And I was like, well, that's kind of what happened. Like, they realized that people weren't buying action figures of – these characters anymore, and so one season they were there, and the next season they had new characters and more action figures to sell, and so of course as an 8-year-old you're just like, oh my gosh, this guy is just as cool as the other guy, and it's like, where'd the other guy go? And it's like, why are you making logical, rational thought there, brain? I'm only 8, shut up and buy me action figures.
He did Your heart left him behind. He got dumped.
Right. And so, you know, for them to kill off everybody like that, and so, you know, the cartoons don't hold up as well as people do. They think they do in their minds. Like, I think the dreams and aspirations of the movies that they have are their memories, not the actual shows.
Yeah. Well, I know you saw Power Rangers last weekend. Like, how do you think a TV series went going into a movie? Do you think that, like, helped it at all versus just trying to do a new Power Rangers show?
You know, like, I really honestly didn't watch, like, the TV show Power Rangers growing up. I kind of just thought it was, like, a cheesy ripoff, like you said, of Voltron. The movie was really good, actually. Like, I know a lot of people, again, use that, you know, it ruined my childhood because they didn't like, you know, the Elizabeth Banks was cast as the villain and they just didn't like that certain things were done. But she was really good as the villain. I mean, it was a little more serious than the Power Rangers cartoon. I remember being like, the show itself seemed a little
kiddish,
like kid, not even just kiddish, but just super like cheesy. Like the
90s special effects
looked so bad.
Yeah.
What? And just bad. Like the explosions looked so bad. And the fight scenes were just so bad. And the special effects were just so bad. Like,
well, it was a guy in a giant suit most of the time, I think, for the giant robot fighting and giant monster fights.
Right, I mean, it was like H.R. Puffin stuff type quality special effects. It was just a dude, like, in a suit. Like, you go to a sporting event where they have a mascot, and 9 times out of 10, that mascot suit looked better than the monster costume on the show Power Rangers.
Fair enough. No, it's kind of good to hear that it wasn't as terrible. I think if you ever try to, like, I think this is just a standard rule. If you love something as a kid, it's not going to be better when you watch it again or rewatch it, a different spin of it later on. Your, like, hopes and dreams and love of it as a kid is the highest point it's ever going to be. So you might as well just not deal with it ever again if you want to, like, contain, like, that purest hope of innocence for that thing you love.
Right, like I was saying, you know, the shows that I would rush home from school to watch, you know, with my friend, you know, at the time, my memories aren't necessarily just associated with the show. It's associated with, you know, hanging out with my friend and, you know, at school, you know, doing the fight scenes or just talking about the show or, you know, it's not the show itself. It's just everything encompassing the show just the happy memories that it brings back to you being a child, your childhood, and not that that show was a well-made show that will stand the test of time.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I wanted to say, you know, before we get too far on, the Voltron show was really, really good.
Nice.
You know, we got sidetracked with Michael Bay, yeah, unfortunately.
We yeah, we did.
But the Voltron show, like, it didn't kill my childhood. Like, if anything, like my inner child grew a little bit. You know, like the first episode, if you're gonna watch it, you might wanna set aside some time, because they basically fused three episodes together into one episode. So the first episode's like almost 70 minutes long.
Oh wow!
But it's worth it, because like if they did it into three episodes, the first two episodes would be kind of boring, and so it's kind of neat. I think they realized that, and so they just kind of linked them all together. So like the first season is only 11 episodes numerically, but in runtime it's 13 episodes.
Yeah.
And so then the second season, they have every episode a standard episode length, and so it's 13 episodes. But you know, even like with like the cheesy Voltron-y stuff that they kept, it's like it's updated animation, updated voice talent, but they still kind of kept that like cheesy spirit that was Voltron. Like, you know, the main villain is trying to conquer the galaxy, and he has a witch that helps him, that's like his like confidant, and he goes to him for things, and she has the power to create these monsters. And so in the show, she, you know, creates a monster to help them go and capture Voltron. So it's like she makes this monster that's supposed to be more powerful than Voltron, so they can go capture Voltron, that's supposed to be the most powerful being in the universe.
Yeah.
And then are shocked when their monster is defeated. And it's like, if your monster was truly more powerful than Voltron, why don't you just send that monster out to conquer the galaxy then? Why bother fighting Voltron if Voltron is now the second most powerful being in the galaxy?
I don't know, because I think it's just like, well, let's get rid of Voltron, and then we could worry about taking over the galaxy, because then there's no chance of being defeated.
Right, and it's not even that they're trying to like sort of get rid of Voltron. They want to capture Voltron and have Voltron and be on their side, because there's no stopping them then. But if you can just conjure up the most powerful monsters in the universe to fight Voltron, why not just do a whole army of them? But
yeah,
that's what that sense. If that happened, then there wouldn't be a show. And you know, I know, but still, the things the nerd in me questions. But outside of that, man, the show is really, really good.
That's good to hear, man. I'll have to try to check it out. I mean, I've just been, I think, so distracted with stuff, and like I'm a few episodes behind. I guess I did it on purpose, because you know, like Netflix, when they send out their original series, like you get to watch all the episodes. Like I'm four episodes behind on Samurai Jack, and you know what? I can't wait, because I'm gonna be able to watch like three episodes back to back to back. You know, instead of just like trying to wait and trying to find some kind of video online, while it's trying to air, like, I think it's going to be, a lot more enjoyable to kind of go back and watch some of these things, especially when you have multiple episodes to watch versus just watching it every week.
Right. You know, and like Netflix with their original series, whether it's good or bad, I'm not sure, but, you know, when they make a show and they put it up, they don't put up one episode at a time. They throw the whole series up.
And it's so binge-watching time.
It's binge-watching time, and so, you know, they strongly encourage binge watching, but yet, you know, they put the, you know, you watch a few episodes and then they almost binge watch shame you, and it's like, hey, are you watching this? It's like,
are you sure?
Of course I'm still watching it, Netflix. Of course I'm still watching it. Why do you ask?
Exactly. It's like, are you still watching this? It's like, I'm pretty sure I am, you know. Come on. Let's be honest here, Netflix. Let's just skip this whole awkward conversation we're having.
Right. I mean, because it's either like, A, you've kind of dozed off if you're watching something if you're power watching something you've seen before and you're just kind of have it on for the background, or if it's something that you've never seen before, you're probably in a comfortable position and don't want to move. And it's now they're making you move and do it, you know, putting in extra effort to binge watch.
My remote is so far away. Why would you do this?
You know, it'd be like if, you know, you tied off your arm and you got your spoon out and you're, you know, heating up your heroin and you put it in the needle, and right as you're about to put it in the needle, you get a knock on the door. And you're like, God damn it. So you stand up, you put the needle down, you go open the door, and it's your dealer, and it's like, are you still shooting up that heroin? Are you sure you still want to shoot up that heroin?
This is the worst fucking example than Netflix. Hope you're proud of yourself.
I actually am, dude. I'm very, very proud of that example because it's the truth, man. Like, you start watching a show and you're just like, nah, I'm just going to watch one more episode. And it's like, if I go to bed now, like literally now, I can get like 7.5 hours of sleep.
If I fall asleep, oh my God,
I can't believe that
shit
happened.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I watch one more episode, I'll get like 7 hours of sleep. I'm cool with 7 hours.
Yeah.
Oh my God, they're doing that? Okay, 6.5. 6.5. Yeah. I'm cool on 6.5. I'll take a nap at lunch. You know, so it's very addictive if you're watching a good show. It definitely triggers the mind the same way drugs do. So I think my heroin example of getting interrupted mid shoot up is very apt.
Yeah. I've discovered while watching anime, when you have 4 episodes left in a series, you're committing to all 4 of those episodes because shit starts to happen the last 4 episodes in anime. So if you're going to pause because you got to go to sleep or go do something and you come up to that fourth to last episode, you stop or else you're going to be there for another 2 hours and you're going to finish it. I've literally been up to 1 a.m. finishing series because like you just couldn't let I just couldn't no, let it end. I couldn't just stop watching. I needed to know what happened with that last 2 episodes, that last episode, because things just start to really pick up.
And if you want to play it super safe, stop when there's 5 episodes left, because at the end of that 5th episode, you know, leading into the final 4, you're going to get previews of the next episode where the shit starts happening, and then you know they just pique your curiosity. I mean, you don't necessarily know what's going to happen, but it's your curiosity is definitely piqued as far as, okay, now I know shit's about to get real. I don't need to sleep tonight. So Voltron good, Power Rangers good, Attack on Titan good, Rick and Morty good. So you know, definitely if you're out there and you want to try to figure out something to watch on TV, we definitely are not giving you a shortage of suggestions or movies even.
Exactly. If we just ruined your fucking weekend. I hope it's not sunny where you are because you're sitting your ass on the couch going to watch some fantastic stuff to watch. And, well, hell, maybe you'll leave the house and go watch Power Rangers.
Definitely. Unless it's not sunny, then you can stay home and
still watch these damn shows. Now you have a better reason.
You have a better reason to stay inside from the cold or the warm or the hay fever. Because, you know, if you live in a place that's warm, there's probably allergy-inducing things outside or just the sun. You might get sunburnt and skin cancer. So we're doing you a community service by recommending some quality inside activities.
Well, it's supposed to, like, rain and snow so up out here in Ohio. So I'm doing you a service, keeping you safe inside your house during this severe weather storm. In April, and it's not even winter time, and there's fucking snow.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's supposed to be like in the it's supposed to be like in the low 60s, and with a chance of rain out here. So you know, we might die as well.
Rain, please leave California alone. It's not thirsty anymore.
What have we done to deserve all this rain?
All right, everybody. That's it for today's show. Hope you guys had fun hanging out with us. We'll see you again next week. Danny, you have a good one, man.
All right, everybody. It was fun. Bye.